Well, hi, everybody, and welcome. How are you doing?
Terrific, Dave. How are you doing?
Great. Just great. Can't believe this is our final class.
No.
It's I know we stretched out over Thanksgiving and Christmas, but it seemed like it's been a really short period of time. I want to check in with everybody first. What's going on in any wins, progress notes, questions, things that you'd like to talk about? What I want to cover are some just a couple of minutes of some final class notes about looking ahead and some things that I'm going to do and some things that you can be looking for, and then to have open a discussion about anything you'd like to talk about, and then save just a bit of time for the neuroscience of selling, the kind of companion piece to what we talked about some last time about influence and persuasion. So let's do a check-in. What's going on?
This is Kat, and I have to say that I'm sad that we're ending today.
Yeah. Yeah, I know.
I'm sad. I appreciate all the weeks that we had together, but I don't know, there was just something that was so intimate about this group and so insightful that I'm really going to miss everyone. So I appreciate really the time that we had together.
I'm also very impressed with how open everyone has been, how much you've shared, how much you've really sort of bared your essence in sharing the stories and you know, it's been a really wonderful working and collaborative alliance, and I appreciate what each of you put into that and how you've co-created that.
I've thoroughly enjoyed the journey. It's been very eye-opening, very informative for me.
Great. Mm-hmm. Good. Me too.
Yeah, it's Lynn here. It's amazing how quickly it went. I can't believe it's the last night.
Yeah,
it was enjoyable, very very informative, and it, for me, basically my thinking around it basically is not only one area, which is money, it's all areas, which is the same thinking or belief. I really got that.
Well, good. I'm glad that came through and that was effective then to look at. While we're talking about a money story, we're really talking about a life story and other stories, whatever we decide to focus on, because the principles and the tools are essentially the same. The process is very similar in terms of what we do and how we engage, regardless of what the content focus is.
Yeah.
So good. I'm glad that was helpful in that way, because that means that it's useful in working with people across the board in whatever way, not just about money story. And that was certainly my intent.
Yeah, that was great. Yep, it worked.
One of the things I find fascinating through this whole process has been that you're able to take a very personal, intimate subject like money is to everybody and talk about it in a very open, easy approach. It's not invasive. It's not inquisitive. It's in a helpful approach. I found this process to be just very interesting.
Well, thank you, Chris, and I agree with you, and I think that once we have that position that we can talk about money as mentor coaching, when we engage money and talk about money with our clients with the same valence as any other topic or issue or emotion or whatever we focus on, we provide a model that someone can then follow and download about making it easier ultimately to talk about whatever they need to talk about, including money and the charged issues of their lives. Are there any things that you would make different or revise in looking back? Anything that would have been more helpful? I get terrific suggestions from people, and I really listen to them and incorporate it to evolve this. So I'm very interested in your points of view.
I have something that I wouldn't change, but I'd like to add this to the conversation right now because it was a turning point for me. And I'm looking through my notes and I see where I had written this down, and I'll just go ahead and read it. It's just six short sentences. It says, when we change what activates the dopamine, making the good decisions or making the changes comes much easier. The change or the feeling must be better to be effective. And for me personally, and I know I said this real early on, when I found something that made me as happy as shopping did or happier, I was able to put that in its place, which was studying at the time for me, and stop the shopping. And honestly, if you knew how much money I'd saved over the last month, you'd have me flying out there and taking you guys out to dinner.
Okay,
it was incredible. So for me, I wouldn't change anything because this was so perfect for me. And then, of course, I want to learn really how to take this to everyone else so that they can replace the bad financial decisions with the more positive ones.
Do you feel, thank you for that feedback, and I appreciate it. Do you feel that you have everything you want and need to do that? That's a real key here for me.
For me personally, yes. Yes. I was able to look very deeply and find out why. This was so important. It was the why I was shopping. And when I found that out and I found something that made me feel even better, then it was real easy.
Uh-huh. And that's really going back to one of the very fundamental and initial principles of what we talked about in terms of writing a new story, whatever the nature of that story is, that you have to be in a new story before you
mm-hmm.
totally give up the old story. It doesn't
mm-hmm.
work just to abstain from the old story. You have to have a new one to be in so that revision of software and rewiring of the brain creates a different experience, and ultimately a different habit will be very real and very present. And what you're saying really is
mm-hmm.
is the application of that principle. And it's where the principle came from because it follows experience.
I got it. I was so happy. Finally got it.
Okay, great.
It was perfect. Perfect for me, thanks.
There's something that's not even related to the material, because the material is always awesome, Dave. It's it's a technical suggestion, and I'm not sure if everyone else, and I don't know it's because where I'm located, but I find when you speak, Dave, it's not as clear as everyone else, and I don't know if it's a headset or something
okay.
else.
Has it been that way throughout, or has
yes.
it been that way only the two times?
No, throughout. I find that when you speak, which is who we want to listen, well, not we want to listen to everyone, but I find for me, even the recording, it's better on the recording than the phone, actually, because I can turn up the volume on the recording, and I'm limited on the phone. But I find your voice is not as clear as our team members that are speaking.
Okay. Is it
yeah.
volume or clarity or both?
Both.
Okay. And have you noticed what I have done an entirely new phone and an amplifier for the last two sessions? Has that changed any at all, or is it still the same?
It's still, right now, it seems like you're maybe talking louder, but I find it still muffled.
Okay.
There's also a buzzing resonance around the,
yeah.
you know, when you speak.
Yeah, okay. Okay.
Yeah, there is. Yeah, that's true, Chris.
I thought I'd addressed it with the totally new equipment, but obviously not. So I appreciate that feedback, because that's to me, unforgivable and something that should be remediable. So thank you. For
okay.
that, I appreciate
okay.
it.
Okay.
Yeah, and that's why I emphasize to everyone to do a landline and a headset so that there's absolutely no distraction when you talk to clients. Even if you don't work by telephone, you're going to be speaking to clients initially or at some point by telephone, and you don't want there to be distraction. obviously, for a training, this needs to be addressed. So I appreciate that.
Okay.
And my apologies that it hasn't been as clear as it could be.
No, that's okay. No, that's fine. You kind of work around it. Like you can, you know, you work with the volume in the recordings. I was always able to bring up the volume even more than the phone.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
All and
right,
it
well,
seemed like it was clearer.
Address that,
on,
but it won't
yeah.
help us.
Okay. Oh, no, that's fine. It's okay. Yes. I know. I didn't. It's okay. Anyway,
I appreciate you mentioning that. It's
okay.
Very helpful feedback. Very,
okay.
very helpful for me.
I have a suggestion, but perhaps this is Diane, and this is just me because I'm much more of a visual learner. And so oftentimes when you're speaking and then you begin to speak very quickly. So sometimes I try to jot down notes and then I just don't get, you know, I don't get enough of it written down. So for me, having either a slower pace or having an outline maybe after the fact of, you know, what you covered personally, not the discussion among us or whatever, some of that is just really useful to me because I tend to remember better when I read something
okay.
as opposed to when I listen to it and try to take notes.
Okay.
And then I keep, okay, I'm going to go back, listen again, and then occasionally I've just had some problems not being able to get the recording at the time that, you know, with it from week to week. So I've had a couple of those issues, but, you know, again, having just even encapsulating what you said, it's so valuable, but, you know, you just speak kind of quickly, and some of the topics are, they cover a lot of new information, you know, that wasn't covered in the reading. So that again, is more how I learn, and everyone else has a different style, I'm sure, but I know for myself, I love seeing things again in writing because it just reinforces, and if I miss something auditorily, I can pick it up that way.
Well, that's an important point, and I want to ask you this. The outline that you, did you print the outline from the beginning that was the annotated outline for all 12 seminars that was like 40 or 50 pages?
Yes. I believe I did, yes.
Was that not enough then?
No, it was good. It's just a lot of what you do cover in the sessions, I feel as if, you know, it's terrific. So, again, I would love to read that, but
okay.
as, again,
okay.
I'm a reader. So.
Okay, got it, yeah. Okay, all right, thank you. So not just the annotated outline, but more visual and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And more
yeah, I mean, even if it's additional, something that, you know, you just said, if you'd like this, you know, you could do it. But I just think it's terrific. You have such valuable information, and sometimes if I just don't want to miss it is my point.
Okay, all right, I got it. And obviously you can't see how much I talk with both of my hands during the whole time. That probably would have helped some.
Nope. Maybe we should have FaceTime.
Yeah, I know.
Or
somebody's got to hold the phone. That's the problem.
Yeah, Skype.
Yeah, okay. Well, thank you. That's very helpful feedback, too, because obviously not everybody is an auditory learner. They're visual. They're kinesthetic, and I didn't combine that. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Just curious, how far back, how long will we be able to access the recordings of some of these sessions? For example, as I read back through my notes, after today, I'm going to go back through all 12 sessions and read my notes, and if there's something that I'm not clear on or I want to, you know, make sure I got the point, I can go back and listen to the session. How far out or how long will these be available?
How long would be helpful to you?
Forever.
More than 30 days after our last class?
Oh, I would.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Dave, once I start ramping my practice up, my coaching practice up, I mean, I'd love to have the ability to, you know, to reflect back on some of the sessions.
All right, let me suggest this because just because of web, because of the use of that page, that's why I've emphasized to my IT guy that you guys can download all 12 of these. So that may be the best solution, to download them. Then you can listen to them anytime. You don't have to wait for access or try to, you know, beat the clock if I need to convert that page or update it. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Is that can you, like, do you have to download each individual one, or can you download just, you know, hit one button and you download all 12?
They'd have to be individual.
I think the answer is individual.
Yeah.
Because that way you don't have to do all the forwarding and that sort of thing. I think my IT guy set it up where it would be individual, because you probably want it to be individual, because you want to go for one instead of trying to, you know, sort out and find it in the middle of a slew of stuff.
No, I completely agree. That'd be a lot easier.
Yeah.
Okay.
They're individually downloadable, and I believe that's the only way, instead of as an entire file.
Yeah, because it's not on the page. It's on our course page. So that's the only way I know it, unless I guess Bill can send something differently. But
so yeah, if you can get to that in the next 30 days to download it, I don't think it may take up some space, but you'll have that on, you know, for reference there on your computer.
Okay, I'll do that.
Okay. Let me mention something a couple of things that I'm going to be doing that you can be looking for. I'm going to have my fulfillment house send each of you, my compliments, a hard copy of the New Money Story Mentor client workbook, so that you'll have an idea of, if you decide to work with clients with this or do groups using this, you'll have an idea of what that's going to be like. It's going to look like it's related to the curriculum that you have, but it's not exactly the same. It's a companion piece, and it has the client workbook on it. It's something that if you decide to work with clients with this, you can co-brand it. You can put your name on the cover, presented by in a new first page, and you can. I'll do a 40%. I do a 40% rebate. The only affiliate people I have are people who've done training with me. I don't open that up at all. But the affiliate rebate is 40%, and that can be something that, and it's my expense for doing the new cover and the new first page. I'm going to send around a MentorPath partner letter that's going to explain all this. There are several parts. It's a 2 or 3 page letter that'll explain everything. But I just kind of want to hit the highlights here to see if there are any questions. And I'll have my fulfillment house send that directly to you, so it'll be, you know, a few days before you get that. And that's my compliment. You're also going to receive a hard copy diploma, certificate as a New Money Story Mentor. I have to get with my printer to do that and then have that mailed, so give me a little bit of time on that. You're also going to get an email with some attachments. One is the New Money Story Mentor logo and tagline, if you want to use that on a website or a card or anything. The MentorPath Partner letter, which explains a whole lot of things. And like the link to the registry. And if you have any trouble with any of these, including the registry, there's also the email from my IT guy, support@mentorpath.com. Ask him to help you, or ask him to do it, and he'll be happy to do that.
Oh, cool.
I'm also going to include in that email a sample press release. Now, it's just a reminder to send a press release to, like, in Dallas, the Dallas Business Journal, if you want to do that, to grab, you know, the business journal in your area, a local or regional newspaper, just to, you know, to send a press release announcing. And there's a sample there, and you, of course, you can amend it whatever way you want, but it's just really a reminder to do that. There's also a reminder of when exactly the quarterly mentor groups will be. There's a system for that. The first Monday every 3 months at 1 Eastern. and the next will be February the 3rd. You should have already gotten a notice about that. I'll send a reminder, the bridge line, and that sort of thing. This one's a little bit different because we're going to spend a little bit more time on the white paper. But I always send a white paper, the quarterly mentor groups. Now, the registry, I think, will be important for individual and corporate referrals. I do spend time promoting that, and promoting the brand and the practice of each of you. You'll get to know some other people on the quarterly mentor group, and we usually spend time talking about best practices and, you know, success stories and that sort of thing. It's an uplifting, you know, stimulating, idea-provoking sort of thing. So I think it'll be helpful. I'll also record that, send around if you're not able to attend that. The license fee, as you saw on the landing page, is included in the curriculum for the first year. After that, it's $45 a quarter. There's a link that, and I'll send around a reminder, an invoice, at a year from now, not from the beginning, but from now, to maintain that license fee and the registry, the mentor groups, the white papers. I mean, I try to bring more than the kind of the nominal fee that is mostly for expenses that you'll pay for a license fee, but it's just to maintain the license in an active way. To use the license is to use the material, the trademark material, in whatever way, and to participate in the brand and that sort of thing. Now, the email will explain everything in more detail. If there are any questions, send them to me after that. But right now, does that sort of make sense, and are there any questions right now about that? Okay. If you change your mind and there are questions, let me know. We talked about I'm going to share with you some ideas about the neuroscience of selling. I'm putting together a 4-part teleseminar series that I think I'm going to do it under my umbrella, under MentorPath rather than CTA, about the psychology of influence, the science of persuasion, and the neuroscience of selling. And I wanted just to share with you some preliminary ideas, some highlights of things, just to sort of get you thinking about marketing your practice, as we talked some last time about positioning yourself in the coaching world and to position your practice for maximum success. So I'll save some time at the end for that. But we talked about last time that you probably wanted just to talk about some cases or some issues or just to have a discussion that, would center around practical things. And so I have the semi-prepared, at least the outline that you have now, that I'll address some things there and highlight some things. But before that, let's talk about what kind of things that each of you may be interested in discussing further, or just kind of brainstorming as a group. We have a wealth of information and experience here to brainstorm.
I have a question, Dave, and that's on the mastermind group that you'll be starting.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
And that's going to be, if I remember correctly, that's going to be early in the day, correct?
It's 11, beginning 11 a.m. Eastern, the first Friday of every month beginning March. It's for 2.5 hours. The first major part of that is a true mastermind group. The last 45 minutes I've preserved for an expert content contributor. And in the first mastermind group, we've had some outstanding people, and I have some outstanding people lined up and ready to go, people who are best-selling authors, people who are leaders in marketing, just people who are very stimulating. Whenever there's a book, for example, I've mentioned Brainfluence by Roger Dooley. Whenever we did that, I sent at about a month out before the mastermind group, the book, and it's really about neural marketing, and people found it immensely useful for marketing their practices. And Roger came on and spent 45 minutes with us talking about some aspects of his book and then just having an exchange. I've had various people on, Barbara Stanny, who talks about women in finance. And she's a kind of a buddy of mine. She's the of the H&R Block. She's the daughter of the R, and she's a very, very well-known international coach working with women in financial issues. And in her last book, I sent her. For a mastermind group like this and the outstanding people who are members of it, nobody ever turned me down. I mean, really some great, great people who are very stimulating in their own right. But mostly, it's a mastermind group with people taking turns, being on the hot seat, looking at developing their practices, developing aspects of what they do. And it's a true mastermind group in the sense that I believe that people will have an exponential return of investment of what they do, of what they put in and the time investment. And I set up an online forum where people can continue to communicate and share information and that sort of thing in between time. So it's a kind of an ongoing thing. It's not just we drop the helicopter in for 2.5 hours on Friday, but and there have been various things that a couple of the people have started working together in various ways. So it's a real catalyst for experiences, and I'm always excited about doing it, and I really choose carefully the people I invite, and I'll tell you, every one of the four of you got an invite, and I didn't invite that many people, so that tells you what I think of this class. So you're safe to mention that, in other words. Yeah, now, did I answer your question, or did I just go off on a rant as soon as I heard Mastermind and got excited about it?
No, you answered my question. I have a little follow-up to that, and that is, for me personally, sometimes I think that's 9 o'clock in the morning my time, a little bit early. If I can't make those, is that a problem?
It's not a problem, but I don't think you'll get full value. I mean, I do record them. And,
okay.
I had one person. Actually, the only person in this geographic area of the world who also lived in Houston, who never made a single one. And I met her for the first time a couple of Monday nights ago at a Houston coaches group, which I never go to. But she emphasized how much value she got because she listened to everyone and would listen to it over. But as a service to the people who are participants, the full value is that people attend
mm-hmm.
all or most of the time. So I think you'd get way more value by attending. I think you'd have a value, but I think it'd be way more value if you were able to attend the one Friday. So 11 Eastern is 9. Yeah. So is that a barrier for you?
For me personally, it is. 9 o'clock in the morning is just something that normally I cannot do. But there are some mornings that it works for me, but I can't commit to showing up.
Sure. Well,
I just can't make it.
One thing that we do is I schedule like the hot seat for someone who wants to have something brainstormed, whether it's a business deal, a personal deal, some kind of professional aspect. And I schedule the hot seats. So I can always schedule your hot seat, for example, at 10 o'clock or 10:30 your time. And when you join at that time, then you can participate with the other people in the hot seats that are there do some live time and be there live for the expert content contributor to interact with that person.
Dave, I think my real concern is that this is something that's near and dear to your heart. I think we can all tell that just from the way you talk about it. If I can't make it, I would hate to be taking a seat that someone else could be. So before I sign up for it, I want to make sure that I am not, you know, taking something that someone else might benefit from if I'm not able to make it on a regular basis.
When I sent the invitations, I very carefully considered who I wanted, and that still goes, and it's open. And, yeah, I get excited. You know, I get excited about feeding my step cat. But, yeah, I am excited about this. I would welcome your considering it, and I just want it to be of optimum value to you, and however that works for you, then that's terrific. And I'll be excited about having you if you decide.
Okay, super. Thank you very much.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Other things you guys want to talk about?
This is kind of a silly thing, but I'm just going to bring it up anyway. Do you find that clarifying what type of coach, mentor coach, money coach, life coach, et cetera, do you think that's really worth spending a lot of time deciding or not? And that goes to everyone else. Sometimes I get a little caught up in the details, because I think as you move ahead, you might find other areas of expertise or whatever. But just initially, defining what type of coach you are, has anyone really thought about that? Or, specifically, I think this money aspect always gets people's attention, to tell you the truth. So I think that's kind of interesting. Yet I don't want to preclude, other kind of areas that I think I'm really familiar with or I could lend some expertise to. So I just was wondering about the rest of you and how you thought about that.
I'm interested. I have some thoughts about that, but I'm interested in hearing the ideas that that each of you have. That's a good question.
Are we talking about the niche?
The niche, or even what I would, sometimes I think people in general, or the response I've heard is, oh, so do you mean you're a life coach? I think life coach has become sort of an acceptable term, but it doesn't mm-hmm. necessarily, it's not, perhaps in my mind, it's not specific enough. But yet, maybe it's better because it's not so specific.
I think that's where and Dave, let me know if I'm off base here. That's where the something second elevator speech comes in.
Mm-hmm.
Right, where you just define who you are. You don't have to say that you're a life coach. You can simply say that you help people get their act together, or however it is. Is that what you're thinking?
Well, that's what I'm asking, because mm-hmm. I that you're absolutely correct in the elevator speech. Yet, sometimes people have different perceptions of. What they hear, obviously, we've talked about this, because someone may say, oh, they wouldn't get your act together. They may take that in a negative way and not be interested. Do you know what I'm saying? Or a money coach, it depends. It's just there's a lot of perception with how you define yourself. So I was just curious how the rest of you, if you were going to say, oh, I'm a mentor coach, or I'm a money coach, or I'm a life coach, or, if you had defined that yet, and why?
I think the important thing here is that what you say comes from your heart, and when you figure out what it is that you're doing, it'll come very easily, all right off your tongue, and people will be able to... I lost I'm having my morning coffee. I'm lost already.
I think you're so right about that, and I'm going to elaborate a little bit about that when I do the neuroscience of selling. So, yes, I think that's really important.
It's when we own what we do, then it's very easy for people to tap into that and just join us on a journey.
Yeah, but I understand what Diane is saying. It's Lynn, because it's sometimes kind of gray. Like people don't get a concrete, it's kind of gray for them to understand. Like, what is coach, life coach? What is that? Like, you know, because it's not tangible. Sometimes when you can express it, when you're not exactly sure what you're saying, Kat, of what it is you're actually doing. So, but some people kind of look for something tangible, and explaining it sometimes, you're a life coach. And it's true that if you don't know yourself, what it is you're doing, it's hard to express it.
Exactly. And with time, if that's your vocation, then it comes very easily. And people, like I said a minute ago, people will want what it is that you have.
Yeah, because we're getting certified and how we're getting certified, you have a system. So you can actually use that as how you're gonna walk people through or guide them through a process. So it's more tangible than just saying, "Oh yeah, I'm a life coach, and you know, come visit me. I'll make your life great." You know, you have something to actually tell them.
Right. Mm-hmm. And I know that Coach Training Alliance is a great coaching program, and that if you haven't done that yet, it might be something to consider if you want to get into life coaching, because then everything falls into place. Instead of just looking, it almost sounds as though you're looking from the outside in instead of from the inside out.
Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of times go ahead.
So I was just saying, does that make sense?
I think it makes sense, but I agree with you, yet I do think that there is some clarity I think there's some clarity very often because people have a sort of a headset about life coach or the abundance of coaches or everyone's a coach or, you know, that type of thing. To further define it, I guess, is all I'm really saying. You know.
Oh my God, I just had this thought. Think Anthony Robbins. He does not have to worry about what people think when he says life coach, because that's exactly what he is.
Does he say that? I never heard that.
Anthony Robbins. You'll have to look him up.
No, I do know who he is. I never knew that. That's how he. He says what he does as far as a career. I didn't know that.
I'm pretty sure that's what it is. Dave, you're still with us, right?
Yes. I believe that of the people out there now, that he is the other person who is most informed about psychology, neuroscience, quantum physics, a number of aspects to integrate that into, he wouldn't call it mentor coaching or he does call himself a coach,
mm-hmm.
but into enhancement and growth. Now, to give you an idea, he only works with a few clients, personal coaching clients, and his yearly retainer is $1 million plus 10%. Now,
there you go.
I want to tell you, I'm a huge fan of his material. He brings together a lot of work and a lot of synthesis. You know, he's not my style, but I really respect what he does and what he's brought together. And I'm very familiar with his work, although I've never attended one of his conferences or weekends. My wife did, and she was there in L.A. for the 4 or 5 day series, the same time that Oprah walked on the coast. My wife walked on the coals as well, and that's a very real thing, and it's very powerful. So, your point is that he doesn't have to specify. But now, I think each of you may need to think about a couple of different things that are very related. One is a niche. Not that it's limiting. A niche is not a fence, it's a beacon. It's the way that you conceptualize who you're having a conversation with as your target audience. It doesn't limit who you see, but when you begin to think about who you want to market to, you're going to need to think in a very specific niche way of who that's going to be, because you're going to have to develop a conversation with that prototype person in a meaningful way and find out where you're going to cross paths, how you're going to get access to that person, and that sort of thing. So that's a little bit different, though, related to what you call yourself. I call myself a mentor coach so that I can get away with giving advice and mixing it up and brainstorming with people and, you know, being a mentor and a coach to somebody, or either or. You know, I work with people who are beginning their practices to help them do that. I work with professional athletes and actors. I work with a broad range of people, and mentor coach works for that. And partly because, you know, just to say coach here in Texas, somebody will say, what sport? You know? So
right.
I hear what you're saying, and there are some people who do find it very useful to say, I'm a financial coach, or I'm a money coach. And that's a very specific focus and specialty. Now, specialty and niche are different. Specialty is what you do and how you do it. Niche is who you market to. So think about each of those in a pure way so that you can be most effective in what you do. Make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. That's great.
Yeah. Thank you.
Now, does that help in your question about do you want to call yourself a money coach or a financial coach? All of the comments.
Yes. And again, I think that sometimes it's easier to articulate that with a certain specific niche, which you can move from. But sometimes I think it's easier to define a market, you know, or to start somewhere, and then you can maybe gain referrals or get other clients or whatever. But sometimes being too general, and it depends where you are. I happen to be in an extremely competitive environment in every respect. So, so it's, you know, it's different in different parts of the country, but, you know, I'm probably in one of the most competitive places in the United States. So, you know, there's lots of competition for everything, and really intense competition. So again, you know, that's part of why, for me, I'm trying to articulate it, just because the numbers are really, really significant that you're stacked against, you know, starting out.
So if you want to call yourself a money coach or a financial coach and you might specially certified as a New Money Story mentor, that can be a leg up in beginning conversations and in opening doors, then you'll still have to do the specific niche marketing that you need to do to develop your practice and look at developing referrals and that sort of thing through the relationships you have.
Yes, exactly. I just know there's such an abundance so I think, yes, I agree with you that gaining expertise and setting yourself apart just by the fact that this is an area that is of particular interest because, well, just because of the proximity to New York City, you know, and
right.
As I've mentioned before, I had no idea there was this many people involved in it. But just because they're involved in it doesn't necessarily mean that everyone's doing it right. So it's appealing.
You know, it's funny. It's sort of like, in a way, I'm listening to this, it's like my business, because if I just told people I'm a real estate broker, they're going to be like, oh, one in a million. If I said I'm a real estate broker that specializes in industrial properties, that's going to catch some people's attention. If my elevator speech is, I'm, you know, somebody says, what do you do? Well, I match supply chain strategies with optimal real estate solutions. Then if I'm at a conference where there's a bunch of supply chain managers, they're going to stop and go, oh, let's talk. If I just say I'm a real estate broker, they're going to be pushing a button to get off the next floor.
Exactly.
I've got to be able to, like, when I'm in a, you know, a lot of it depends upon the, like you were talking about, you have to be flexible to adapt what you do and what you are. If you're in an elevator and you're talking with somebody just randomly and they say, what do you do? Then my tagline, my line is always, I'm a commercial real estate broker specializing in industrial properties. But if I'm at a conference where I know there's other, supply chain managers, logistics professionals there, that's when I use my elevator speech, my tagline in the elevator, which is, again, you know, matching supply chain strategies with optimal real estate solutions.
And that's a great example of a really highly specific niche. I have never heard of all the coaches I've trained, a coach who has too narrow or too specific a niche. In fact, the coaches who have had the very most refined and defined niche, really drilling down, are the ones who fill their practices first.
Yes, I agree with you. I can see how that really works because, once again, people get kind of bored. Oh, they've heard of that before. They may not even know what it is or whatever, but their awareness or in general, many people's awareness is so limited these days, whereas if you can catch their attention about something specific, not about them, but very often people, you know, want to refer you or they know of someone that could use that service. They want to help people, but they just don't even know if there is any help, you know, who could provide that service. That's where I think the articulation and being specific, is terrific.
Oh, okay. I have to jump in here. Sorry, Chris.
Okay, go ahead.
This is something that's just a little bit comical. When I first started out, my niche was going to be helping people that couldn't sleep at night. So I started running ads for my company, which I called at that time Night Owl Coaching, and I began running ads. Well, it wasn't very specific, and I started receiving phone calls from people who wanted to know if I would come to their hotel room and visit them. So it really helps to be a little more specific. It definitely was for me.
Exactly.
Yeah, I was not going.
If I would decide to run a prostitution service, I've got the name for it. Wow, that's a great story. Yeah, a great illustration of a very important point.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, if you said, I help people define their relationship with money. What does that do, Dave? Is that when you come up with a line like that, what do you do? Well, that's something like that. Is that, I don't know what that does for people. Obviously, hopefully it would have them say, well, tell me more.
Yeah, that's the question I would have. Would it, and I'm listening to it as if I were hearing it for the first time, to say, tell me more. It gets me in the ballpark, and it doesn't say. I mean, I've never heard anything as good as your statement about what you do in commercial real estate, and then what you do as a follow up to very specifically say that. I think that's a beginning, and then you're going to have to be ready to define what you do in terms of coaching versus financial advising, a number of other things.
That would be hopefully someone would ask the question, tell me more, and that's the point at which I would reference the term coach.
Uh-huh.
Clarify that I'm not a financial planner. that this is really the step before any financial planning, any specific stock brokering advice, et cetera.
Uh-huh.
You have to understand your relationship with money before you know how to invest it.
Uh-huh.
And to me, that would be, this is sort of the preamble to any kind of investing.
Yeah, and an engagement question is, do you really know your money story, and are you happy with it?
Yeah.
Because I don't know of anybody who's going to really be able to clearly and positively answer both of those.
Many people don't want to. I think they're so overwhelmed that's why, once again, I think having it broken down to be more specific is also such a good idea, just finding a little bit of an edge as opposed to, it's almost like, many people just say, oh, I don't want to go into therapy, but they can say, but I want to figure out how to talk to my teenagers or something. It's mm-hmm. just, it really is breaking it down so it becomes, a smart goal, to tell you the truth, just more specifics.
Uh-huh.
Dave, I liked what you said a little while ago, and that was that we could just say that we're financial coaches and new money story mentors. And for me personally, I know that people will ask what a new money story mentor is. The financial coach, people will understand. The new money story mentor, I think people will ask what that means.
Uh-huh.
I like that a lot.
Short and sweet.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah. Great. Let me mention some things that are on your outline, unless there are other points you want to make that can kind of, I believe, further this conversation in terms of how you're thinking about presenting yourselves, marketing your practice, and that sort of thing. Each of you, I think, have the outline and have it printed out. I want to begin with the first four questions. Do you earn your living trying to convince others to purchase goods or services? Do you work for yourself or run your own operation, even if it's part-time? Does your work require elastic skills, the ability to cross boundaries and function outside your specialty to do a variety of things through the day? And do you work in education or training or healthcare? Now, you are a salesperson. If your answer to any one of these four questions is yes, what people who sell do is to move people. And social sciences show us that we have to believe in what we're selling or we won't sell. We talked some about that last time in looking at the science, looking at persuasion and influence, about how we have to believe, how we have to believe in ourselves. And you have to really address a couple of questions in terms of your belief. Do you believe the person you're selling to, if in agreeing to buy, will his or her life improve? And when your interaction is over, will the world be a better place than when you began? And if the answer to either of these questions is not yes, then you have to recalibrate. Now, we talked a little bit last time about really what is your 1%? What is your why? Remember we talked about think about the brain in terms of three circles. The outer circle is the what. The inner circle, having to do with the midbrain, is the how. The inner circle, the basic core reptilian brain, is the why. We make decisions based on why. We make decisions based on identity, as we talked about before. So what we want to think about is how do we capture that? And I'm not going to go through each of these, but this fits very much with what you were discussing think about the different entities that have a one-word pitch? Think about what technology company do you think of when you hear the word search? What credit card company comes to mind when you hear the word priceless? In 2012, his reelection campaign, Obama built his entire strategy around one word, forward. The question pitch, Ronald Reagan's, are you better off now than you were 4 years ago? The Twitter pitch, brief, simple, specific, a micro message, 140. The mark of an effective tweet, like an effective pitch, is that it engages someone and mostly encourages them to take the conversation further. And think about this. Readers assign the highest rating to tweets that ask questions of its followers. This confirms the power of the interrogative, of asking questions to engage and to persuade. Now, and there's an example of the Pixar pitch. And let me give you an example of that. A nonprofit, and look at the six components. Once upon a time, every day. A six-sentence format is appealing by taking advantage of the persuasive force of a story within a framework that emphasizes conciseness and a discipline. An example, imagine there's some background noise and some breathing noise. Could I get you to mute? You're probably not hearing it. Thanks. Imagine a nonprofit. There's still some breathing noise. If you would mute, please, for just a bit. A nonprofit organization that has created a home HIV test looking for funders. Okay. Once upon a time, there was a health crisis haunting many parts of Africa. Every day, thousands of people would die of AIDS and HIV-related illness, often because they didn't know why or how they were infecting people. One day, we developed an inexpensive HIV kit that allowed people to test themselves with a saliva swab. Wow. Because of that, more people got tested. Because of that, those with the infection sought treatment, took measures to avoid influencing others. Until finally, this threatening disease slowed its pace and more people lived longer lives. So, three key questions prepare your pitch. What do you want people to know after they hear your pitch? What do you want them to know? What do you want them to feel? And what do you want them to do? So here's an emphasis on listening, because for most people, the opposite of talking isn't listening, it's waiting. You know, when somebody's speaking, you wait till they take a breath or a pause, and then you say what you want to say. And that results in kind of a halfway position on both listening and talking. And some professionals don't even bother to wait. You know, there was a study that found that physicians interrupt the majority of patients after 18 seconds when they began to talk during an appointment, way before they told their story. So here's an example. And this is kind of a basic example, but suppose you're raising money for a charity. And I'm emphasizing this to have this in mind for any questions that you have. Suppose you're raising money for a charity and ask someone to contribute $200. She might say no, but she's more likely to say, sorry, I can't give $200. Well, consider that an offer. Reframe it, in other words. Perhaps she can donate a smaller amount. Or consider if she says, no, I can't give right now. Consider that an offer as well. The obvious move is to focus on the right now and ask when might be a better time, or even to consider the entire sentence as an offer in itself to contribute in a different way, such as being a volunteer. So listen carefully and flexibly and change the way you listen and change the way you respond. So consider hearing everything that's said as an offer and to respond to the offer component. So what you're doing is converting yes but to yes and. The idea is not to win, but to listen. So whenever anybody opposes something, go with the opposition. Don't think about it as an Eastern martial arts. Go with the flow. Go with the opposition and align yourself with the person. When we move from selling to serving, we engage the recipient as a collaborator, and we become empathically attuned to the needs and the effectiveness of what's going to benefit that person. So we talked about this a little bit last time, but I want to talk about it from a different perspective. And don't hesitate to interrupt me at any point. The commitment is the why. Remember we talked about the why is the most important thing. The why is the internal, the core of your brain. That's where people make decisions from. People are going to believe if you believe. They're going to want to participate in what you believe in. The most common difference between the best and everybody else is a compelling reason, commitment. Meaning comes from contribution, something you believe in that makes a difference. No strategy is going to replace integrity and caring, but to make a difference by connecting with others. How to make a difference is your why. This determines what you're going to focus on, what you don't. 80% of success and influence is finding a big enough why. 20% is figuring out how. Now, there are some steps. The science of persuasion and why we buy. We buy either from internal pressure, created from the inside by an innate desire, or external pressure, from the outside, like through television or salesperson. Of the two, internal pressure is way more important. Since people buy for their own reasons. They buy wants first and needs later. So the twin forces of motivation that drive all human behavior, the desire to avoid pain, the desire to seek pleasure. Remember, we talked about that in deconstructing why someone is not moving forward. If they want to do it, they've committed to do it, it makes every logical sense for them to do it, and they're still not doing it. They're choosing, they're electing to say no. Look at what the pain is that they are avoiding, that they're not even aware of. Same thing with selling somebody. Same thing with getting someone to be your client. A master formula of persuasion to associate buying with getting pleasure and not buying with pain. People will do more to avoid pain than to seek pleasure. Remember, risk aversion, it is twice as painful to lose $100 as it is pleasurable to gain $100. So we may need to think about the consequence, the positive consequences if they do, the negative consequences if they don't. If someone buys, here's the simple essence. They associate more pleasure with buying than not buying. If somebody doesn't buy or sign on for your service, they associate more pain with buying than not buying. So there are three steps here to think about. One is find the problem or the hurt, a deep want or interest that's not fulfilled, what they want but they're not getting. The foundation of effective selling is to create more hurt, or to not create it, but to highlight or reveal more hurt if they don't purchase. And secondly, disturb them, perturbate them. That's part of what we do naturally as coaches. An undisturbed prospect will not buy. Motivators all are emotional. Find the motivator and disturb it or perturbate it by asking questions. To have the best relationship, to be intelligent, to be competent, to survive, to be successful, whatever it is that is their motivation. And three, show them how to solve it, how to heal their discomfort by using your product or service. The persuasion process is of getting your customer to clearly associate the most desired feeling or state with your product or service. Now, the key to all this is you have to have a substantial quality product and believe in it. Both of those have to be true, or it won't fly. You will be revealed, and you know that. That's why you've developed your expertise. That's why you've committed yourself to doing what you're doing. I'm only speaking of converting that into clients to have the kind of business, to be able to bring the value and have the influence of the business that you want. And remember this. People don't buy products or services. They buy states. space of mind. Whatever we associate to something determines our behavior. To change behavior, change the associative link. When I say people buy states, think about this. Who's paid more, an educator or an entertainer? The people who are the most fantastic salespeople are the people who are best at changing states. Entertainers are paid significantly more because their specialty, their expertise, is in changing states. And remember, we talked about people buy for emotional reasons and justify by logic. And when we do that, we control someone's focus by the questions we ask. Remember how we get what we focus on, not what we want, and the way that we focus is by asking questions. Remember when we talked about an example of that is by writing down three questions at the end of the day that when you answer them first thing in the morning, it's going to put you in an empowered state. It's going to vault you to a state of mind. Same thing in asking questions of our potential client. So this moves to the four primary tools of influence: rapport, a feeling of caring, a real emotional investment, and we have to have it, that has to be authentic. Questions, to focus on what their beliefs are and to get people to focus in a particular way. And personal congruency is the third. What you say verbally and non-verbally have to match. You have to be authentic. And a tool of influence, the most significant tool of influence, as we talked about before, comes from being certain about what you're saying. The person who feels most certain is the greatest influence. And four is state management of yourself. When you manage your emotions, your states of mind, it's going to be contagious. So that's going to be most important. In fact, the two biggest determinants of success, the biggest difference between success and failure, the two most important determinants of success, beliefs and state management. And those two are crucial in terms of engaging. I know we're out of time almost, but I want to move to just highlight a couple of things because I want to do an epilogue in the last couple of minutes just to review and reflect on what we've done. When we create conviction or help someone create their own conviction, remember these. People don't buy facts. They buy benefits. They want to know what's in it for them. They don't care what all you've been through, what kind of journey you've done. They don't care where you went to school, what kind of grades you made in chemistry. They want to know what's in it for them. They don't care where your experiences have been as long as you can bring them the benefits that they need. People buy for emotional reasons and justify with logic. Emotions drive us. So think about that. That are just facts, benefits, and resonate with someone and listen to really what they're seeking, what they really want and need. Selling is the transfer of emotion. For someone to buy, they need to feel certain they're going to get what they want. And always, always, convictions start with you first. Then, the client. And I'm going to reiterate a couple of things. Whenever two people meet, the person with the greatest amount of confidence will influence the other. Someone has to buy for their reasons, not yours. And the number one way, give them the experience and conviction that they will get what they want from your product or service. Find the dominant emotion for buying, even though someone wants to believe it's for logical reasons. So those are the things that I think about that just in highlight that might be most helpful overall. I don't know if I included this in the outline, but the strategy. strategies of the most successful people, the top sellers, are about a half dozen. One is affect your own emotional state. Reset after the last experience. That's the most common thing that I deal with in professional athletes. They have to reset after the last experience. You know, they have a bad play, they mess up, or they have a huge success, they still have to reset to be 100% grounded for the next play. Secondly, find the deepest needs, the core emotional driver of someone, and then figure out how that you can help them achieve that. Help them manage their state, and give them also a way, number four, give them a way to justify buying, because they need that, to justify getting what you need, what we have to satisfy the need, because they're going to have to justify logically and consciously whatever they do. Additionally, be flexible. The person most flexible controls the situation. And six, be a team player. And this has to do with clients' needs. Is there more value than the concern that they have? How can you create and sustain interest? How can you build trust and rapport continuously? So I mention these things just to emphasize about kind of the mind and brain science of moving your practice to the next level. And this is going to be helpful to you and your clients when you know these things, and that you can help them do what they need to do in order to help themselves and facilitate their process in this regard. Does this all make sense to you? Are there questions about this?
Dave, what was the third strategy?
The third strategy was manage the customer state. The strategies of top sellers. Yeah, manage the one, affect their own emotional state. Two, find the deepest needs to qualify the prospect. In other words, three, manage their state. Four, give them a way to justify buying. Five, be flexible. And six, be a team member.
Got it. Thanks.
Okay. If you think about this, I know this was rushed and you couldn't see my hands moving on this either. If you think about this, and there are questions about it, email me, because I want to spend our last minute or two with a kind of epilogue, and this to me is a way to think about and reflect on our experience together. What if all you did in this course was to master effectiveness to make changes? What if all you did was to put yourself in a state that you're better at engaging people? Or what if all you did was to learn more about your own story? Or to learn about the potential of pleasure and of avoiding pain? What if all you did was to help someone be more authentic? Or to change beliefs into changes that last? Or manage states of mind, your own states of mind? What if all you did was learn how to recognize belief systems? What if all you did was to learn to explore your own mind, or even to develop a greater informed sense of caring? What if you decide to seize your professional story and develop a practice and a presence of massive impact and success, to sensitize yourself to the gifts and skills you already have, the power of your influence to increase the quality of your life as well as others, to recognize that these skills can make a difference for you for the rest of your life and for others who you will impact your lifetime, your professional legacy? What if you decide to know that your ideas will not die with you or be limited to your direct contact, that you will leave your mark? Again, your legacy, and to acknowledge that each new decision may affect the quality of your life. If you get any of these things, and if you commit to a level of excellence to increase the quality of your life, your practice, and your clients, then from me, this training has been a tremendous success. And for you, I hope this is the beginning of a new podcast. You each have shared in my passion to help extraordinary people make enduring contributions. And I really feel privileged to have spent this time with you. I hope you'll let me know how it's affected you ongoing. And I thank you for the honor of learning with you, and I hope I've lived into my mission to inspire and guide you to achieve your unique, most empowered life and professional stories. And I emphasize to you, I'm available, I'm interested in what you're doing, and we've just begun. Thank you.
Dave.
Hey.
Thanks, Dave. That's awesome. Really enjoyed it.
Dave, I just noticed that you're going to be doing a new wellness story training, correct?
Yes, in February, right.
Beginning February 18th?
Yes.
Oh, good. I'm so excited.
Now, if you sign up for that, you're going to force me into coming up with new stories and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So.
I'm in the process of hitting sign up now. So.
Oh, God. All this pressure. Okay.
Thank you, Dave.
Absolutely.
Terrific.
You're very welcome. And I really hope to continue our collaboration. And if I can be of help to you in any way, I really hope you'll let me know. And as I mentioned again, I don't train a lot of people because I really put a lot of energy and investment into the people I do and the selection process on the front end and really helping you develop your practices ongoing. So if I can help you, I'm very serious. Let me know.
Dave, you've done
Thanks, Dave.
Mission accomplished for us, for me, certainly.
Yeah.
It's been fun. It's
mm-hmm.
been total fun for me and a privilege, and I appreciate that. It's an honor to work with you.
Lynn, Diane, and Kat, I've really enjoyed this.
Thank you. I've enjoyed it, too.
Super.
So
mm-hmm.
have I. Thank you. It's great.
You've all co-contributed to all of that, so thanks very, very much.
Thank you.
Good
night. We'll talk again.
Bye now.
All the best.
Absolutely.